And we turn our attention to one of the most shocking and heartbreaking developments to emerge from October the 7th, and that is the DINA Project, a coalition of Israeli legal and gender experts who released last week findings documenting systematic sexual violence committed by Hamas during the attack on southern Israel. Named after the biblical Dina, who was silenced after her rape, the project aims to give voice to victims and demand international accountability. And I'm joined now from Israel by Etta Prince Gibson, who is an international journalist covering civil society, gender, and peace processes, and is also a member of the DINA Project. Etta, thank you so much for chatting with us. What do you think are the most significant findings from the DINA Project's investigation into October the 7th?
The report does two things, and I think they're equally important. One is the findings are that, in fact, we found systematic conflict-related sexual abuse. We found the same behavior and similar processes of rape and mutilation of bodies in exactly the same way in at least four, possibly more, locations. And that is a sign, not of rogue behavior, of course, which is Hamas's claim, but that it was systematic and it was deliberate. And I think the largest concentration of information to date, it includes information that was public, as well as interviews that we conducted. And I want to say that the interviews not only, and the evidence was not only very carefully collected, but we were very sure to guarantee that we did not, for instance, you know, count the same event twice because we have two eyewitnesses of the same event. We counted events. We have about 16 eyewitnesses, many of whom have never come forward before. And the second part of the report that I want to emphasize is that we are making a distinction, excuse the expression, regular rape. But regular rape, in civil society or in regular society, is X rapes Y or several X's rape Y. Well, unfortunately, we don't have a lot of women left as to testify, because they were murdered. In many cases, their bodies were so mutilated that it took very long to identify them. Moreover, they are so traumatized that if they survived, they are not coming forward yet. And that is a phenomenon we know from that kind of events throughout the world. It takes years for women to come forward, having undergone the kind of horrific assault that they went through. We're looking at within existing law, and I want to emphasize, we're not asking that the law be different. We are saying there are parts of existing laws in almost all countries and in the international framework that have a way to deal with this. It's just not been commonly used in the international process. And we have delineated in a very careful way how these people can be brought to
justice.
To justice. Thank you. Somebody interrupted me. How these people could be brought to justice. Because if we continue to say as if it were regular rape, because if it were regular rape, we'd be doing a very, very great disservice to justice in the world.
Etta, what kind of evidence did the DINA Project rely on, and how confident are you in its credibility?
We are very confident in the validity and the reliability of this evidence. First of all, we cross-checked everything. We talked to people, we interviewed them, we cross-checked with existing information. So we are not in any way inventing information. We are counting on absolutely real and reliable evidence. These are people we spoke with, that we know of. Yes, some of them we found through existing, but we spoke to them. We also spoke to first responders. We spoke to the people who were working at the, sadly, at the forensics and at the morgue.
How do these findings challenge or reshape the global narrative around the war and the victims of October the 7th?
Well, first of all, it combats the denial. We are appalled at the denial to begin with. But when we are talking about denial, even in the face of the kind of evidence that we have presented, it is really quite striking that people can deny this. Second of all, it changes the idea that these cannot be prosecuted. In fact, the international, since the special court for Rwanda and for the former Yugoslavia, there's almost no prosecution of conflict-related sexual violence, not because conflict-related sexual violence isn't continuing to happen, which it most certainly is. So what we are saying is that by presenting the collecting this kind of evidence and creating a theoretical way to evaluate what that evidence is and bring it to court, first in the domestic courts, of course, and then in the international framework, we're challenging the narrative of these people getting away with impunity.
I want to ask you about two things.
I just want to point out the Yazidis, whom we know what happened to them. We know the story of, Nadia Mawad, the one who wrote her story. And yet, the former the Yazidis, I believe it's one, if any, that have in any way been prosecuted. No one's in jail. So the message of the narrative is that it is okay. You can keep doing this.
You spoke about denial, and I want to mention parallel to that the silence. Do you feel that the silence from the feminist world in particular, how do you make sense of that? Do you think it was ideological, political, or something else entirely?
Well, I divide up different groups. The denial by the women's groups, I have to say, I'm not sure I even today I understand it. Israeli women have stood along with other women in countries throughout the world to say we will not accept that kind of violence, and yet we were abandoned. We feel betrayed. I think that there is a little bit, and I don't want to be too cynical, but I will be, of what's called flavor of the month,
almost what's
fashionable. The Palestinians are the in a world that is incapable of dealing with complexity, it's either you're either pro-Palestinian or pro-Israeli, as though these were contradictory in a way. I believe you can be pro-Palestinian and pro-Israeli, but I certainly believe you can condemn this kind of violence and at the same time condemn whatever you think of Israel's position. They're not mutually exclusive. The position that we want to make is that conflict-related sexual violence is wrong. A war or a liberation, rape isn't liberation. And doing this on the bodies of women is not a liberation movement. Even if I believe, or whatever I believe, vis-a-vis the Israel-Palestinian conflict, and I'm not answering this, no woman, no matter what her government, no matter what the color of her skin, no matter whether she lives in Africa, or her skin is dark, and therefore is less on the radar of the some of the powers in the northern hemisphere or in the white hemispheres, if we want to say that, or because it's not a popular cause. No woman, no matter what her government or anything else about her, should ever be a victim. And no people should be a victim of this, because I want to add that conflict-related sexual violence is not merely, of course, in very sad quotations, an attack on an individual. It's an attack on our very sexuality, on our lifeblood of a people. It is an attempt to humiliate and exterminate a people.
You mentioned earlier,
to a certain extent, not only virtually, but certainly virtually.
You mentioned earlier bringing these people to justice. What's the next step, legally, diplomatically, and morally, now that the evidence is out there?
Well, the first step is that we are going to create as much attention and awareness as we can, that the UN, I believe in August, will soon be issuing its blacklist of terrorist organizations. And we insist that Hamas, to insist, we can't make it happen. But our stand is that since Hamas did this, Hamas should be considered a blacklisted group. That is an obvious statement. Our next step is to bring this to world awareness that it is possible both domestically and internationally to bring perpetrators of conflict-related sexual violence to justice. Justice is crucial for the victims, for the peoples, and to put an end to this.
Etta Prince Gibson, an educator, columnist, media analyst, and a journalist that covers civil society, gender, and peace processes, and a member of the DINA Project. Thank you so much for weighing in on that. As the world debates, the survivors and victims deserve to be heard, not forgotten. And you can follow the full report online, and you can also follow the DINA Project's ongoing work to ensure that justice isn't just an ideal, but a reality.